Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from Wisconsin Eye's Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. The final push continues. Kamala Harris and Tim Walz swung through Wisconsin this week. Meanwhile, Barack Obama returns to the state next week to promote early voting. New fundraising numbers shed light on the races for U.S. Senate and Congress. And U.S. Senator Tammy Baldwin meets businessman Eric Hovde in their only debate of the campaign. All that and more on Rewind, your week in review for October 18th.
Hi, I'm J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse O'Poyan.
And welcome to Rewind. So, Jesse, it would not be Rewind in mid-October without a highlight reel of campaign stops.
Of course.
So this week we had Kamala Harris making three stops in Wisconsin, La Crosse, Milwaukee, and Green Bay. Tim Walz in Eau Claire and Green Bay. So first let's go to a video of the Harris rally, along with Brian Schimmel, State GOP chair, talking about kind of what he sees as her problems in Wisconsin.
Sure.
We look at housing, nearly 30% increase in the cost of housing here in the state of Wisconsin. On top of that, gas has gone up almost a buck and a quarter when I go to fill up at the Delafield Quick Trip. Housing, gas, food, you name it, prices have gone up since Kamala Harris has been in office. And it was better when Donald Trump was our president. We can't afford Vice President Harris and certainly can't afford Governor Walz and the problems he has in Minnesota. And that's why I'm proud to support past and future President Donald Trump and Senator J.D. Vance on the ticket.
Donald Trump will give billionaires and corporations massive tax cuts. He will cut Social Security and Medicare. He will get rid of the $35 cap on insulin for seniors. He will make it easier for companies to, check this out, he will make it easier for companies to deny overtime pay for workers. And will impose what I have named a Trump sales tax, because essentially he plans on putting a 20% tax, if not higher, on everyday basic necessities, which economists have estimated will cost the average American $4,000 more a year. Well, we are not going back.
All right, Jesse, so why are they coming to Wisconsin so much at this point? So we've got those visits this week. I saw the West Wing staff is coming to Madison this weekend.
Yeah.
Warren's back in the state. We are counting the minutes. We get an announcement about J.D. Vance and Donald Trump being back, because it's been like a week since we've seen
either. 5 minutes. Yeah.
So why the intensity right now, do you think?
Well, I think, you know, I said like 10 years ago, I'd leave this state the second it stopped being interesting, and it hasn't stopped being interesting, and it continues to get more and more interesting. We are in play. You know, we're one of, what, seven states that are really, really, really in play. And I think, you know, there's lessons that have been learned since 2016 when Hillary Clinton didn't come here for, you know, for Democrats, and Republicans have learned. Certainly, you know, Donald Trump focused a lot of energy here in, in his last several campaigns. And so I think they know that they have to be here, and they can't just go to Madison, Milwaukee. They have to go to Eau Claire. They have to go to La Crosse. They have to go to Green Bay. They have to go to Superior. I mean, you have to go all over the place. It's not a small state, but you got to kind of crisscross it to actually make that impact.
So, interesting to me that in Milwaukee it wasn't really open media. She met with students kind of behind closed doors, did a class with Mark Cuban, did the statement about the death of the Hamas leader, then different messages. So in La Crosse, I'm sorry about gaslighting, how Trump is gaslighting us.
So much talk about gaslighting.
And then in Green Bay is more about kind of like mocking as a father of IVF. So what did you make of that? Let's talk about La Crosse first and the gaslighting. What did you make about that, the January 6th references?
Well, I think, you know, anyone who looks back on January 6th, I think they most people view that as an actual threat on democracy, whatever party you're, you know, a member of, or wherever you fall on the spectrum. So, you know, it makes sense to keep referencing that. The IVF stuff also, I think, is another thing that just really crosses party lines. So, you know, she's hammering on some points that I think don't really fall into one party or another. They're just sort of universally held beliefs.
It seems like Republicans are trying to make the argument that her talking about January 6th is the joy is gone from the campaign. I've read some stuff nationally suggesting that she is trying to make a sharper contrast with Trump about these issues, mm-hmm. kind of like going back to what Biden was doing, right? Back in the summer before his opportunity for reelection flamed out.
That's a nice way to say it.
Try to be polite. But he was basically, this guy's a danger. And so we're hearing more of that rhetoric from Harris about he's a danger. Is that going to move people? I guess that's the one thing about January 6th I can't quite figure out. Is it a base issue for Democrats, or are they actually going to move moderates? Mm. Because you're not, if you're a Trump fan, you're not leaving. I mean, think about what they said about that guy over the last nine years.
Right, right.
You were locked in.
Yeah.
So what's the January 6th stuff? How's it move people?
Well, I think there is a point to the joy thing. I mean, you can't just run on joy. It was a real good motivator for a little while, and they capitalized on a lot of the memes and a lot of the sort of fun that was happening at the time when she took over the top of the ticket. But also, fear and anger are strong motivators too. And I think there's still a lot of anger over January 6th and probably some fear over, what does that look like if it comes back around this time? Yeah.
So they're also here because early voting is starting. Absentee ballots are going out as we speak. So here we've got an update on the push for the early vote.
Yep.
As of Thursday this week, 585,515 absentee ballots were requested in Wisconsin. Now, I don't feel like you compare 2024 to 2020. It's a different environment. But so going back to 2022, the same 19 days out from the election, 455,828. So we're well above that. But to me, the big push is going to be the early vote. And that's why we're seeing Barack Obama come back to Wisconsin. First visit in quite a while, actually. This campaign cycle.
Yeah.
I would guess that rally would be somewhere close to campus.
I would think.
Call me
probably.
Crazy.
Yeah.
But it's coming the day early voting starts.
Yeah.
That's not a coincidence. So tell me, why is he coming on Tuesday?
Well, I mean, Democrats have always been pretty good about pushing early voting, but Republicans have started to emphasize that quite a bit more, too. And even Donald Trump, who for so long, talked about, the dangers and the conspiracies of early voting, is now starting to encourage people to do that. So I think, Democrats are going to come here and make that push again because they're seeing Republicans start to do the same thing.
I think if Democrats could, they'd have buses lined up outside the rally to take kids right to the early
Of course,
the closest early voting site to cast ballots.
Yeah, but then you'd have all the talk about the buses, taking.
Right. Obama's got a pattern here. So I went back and looked. He spoke to 30,000 at Bascom Hall at UW October 4th of 2012.
Okay,
that helped. He came back a month later to Madison, right at the eve of the election.
Yeah.
In 2010, though, he came to Library Mall on campus and spoke. Did it help in 2010, the wave election? Mm-hmm. So to me, it's not just about him showing up. There has to be the energy, which plays into why Harris is here.
Yeah, and I've covered a lot of Obama events, but most of them have been in Milwaukee. I have not really. I mean, I've been doing this for 10, 11 years here in Madison. I don't know that I've ever covered maybe one or two Obama events in Madison. I mean, he's really focused his attention in Milwaukee in the time that I've been here.
And what I kind of thought was interesting about him coming here is they're obviously trying to reach college kids.
Yeah.
College kids. Sorry, I've got one of
students,
my own.
College students.
But Obama left office January of 2017, seven years ago. Yeah. Some of those people are 11 years old. Like, do they remember Barack Obama? Does he motivate them? I'm kind of fascinated by that, the draw.
But also, I mean, if you look at Wisconsin, look at the last, 20 years of elections. I mean, we have always had close elections except for the years that Obama was on the ballot. So there's maybe something to that, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yes, I've covered 6 presidential elections so far. Only 2 were about, so I've been wearing 23,000 votes, both had Barack Obama on the ballot.
Yeah.
Maybe that is the key. Maybe he's maybe he knows the magic about Wisconsin.
Something to it, maybe,
But these absentee ballots that are out, you can mail them in or do drop boxes. Megan Wolf, Elections Commission Administrator, talked about drop boxes this week. So we have at least 78 drop boxes available in Wisconsin. In 2020, we had more than 500. Again, I think it goes back to, we're not going to vote what we did 4 years ago.
Right.
I have a hard time diving these numbers and saying this is going to happen because of what I'm seeing. But let's first listen to Megan talk about what's happening with the drop boxes in Wisconsin amid this push from some not to use them in Wisconsin.
Sure.
As was the case in 2020, there is not a requirement for municipalities or municipal clerks to report to use drop boxes, first of all, or to report their drop box locations to the Wisconsin Elections Commission. So just keep in mind that our data we have on the number of drop boxes is not comprehensive. It's just those jurisdictions that have reported Dropboxes to us. So keeping in mind these limitations, the data that we have indicates that there are at least 78 Dropboxes in use across Wisconsin. And how does this compare to 2020? In 2020, there were approximately 500 Dropboxes in use for the presidential election. And I also want to point out, for the many years prior to the 2020 election, there were many additional Dropboxes in use as well.
So, Jesse, I don't want to dive into like the requests in Dane County or Milwaukee County versus Adams. I mean, I'm not sure read a whole lot into it. Last week, we looked at like where we were at for requests, like as a share of the overall total compared to 22 and 20.
Sure.
And, you know, Milwaukee and Dane were down a little bit in terms of their share of the request. Now, does that mean anything? I don't know, because you don't have voter registration in Wisconsin by party. Mm-hmm. So I can't tell you who's returned these ballots and whatnot. That said, what are you watching for the early vote? Like, to me, that's really where the focus is going to be, especially you mentioned Republicans. So what should I watch for the early vote numbers the next 2 weeks?
I mean, the thing about the early vote to me is I guess there's not that much to read into it. You know, I think more and more people are realizing that it's a convenient way to vote if it works for you. I personally, if I'm voting, I vote. I prefer to vote the day of. But a lot of people, you know, it doesn't work out to do that. And I don't know that that's a partisan thing. You know, I think that it's just more and more people realizing that it is convenient to vote that way. And I think if we look back at the last few elections and we look at those early, you know, return numbers, it hasn't really told us a whole lot.
Yeah, and does it cannibalize your election day turnout? Like, that's one big question. And then two, Republicans with the early vote, they've been pushing this, you know, for a couple of years now. What I'm kind of watching is, in talking to my sources about the turnout operations, like the Democrats, they're battle-tested. They've been through this, like, cycle after cycle.
Yeah.
The state GOP doesn't have the resources that the state Democratic Party does.
Right.
And it looks like Turning Point USA is a big part of their turnout operation.
Yeah.
Their philosophy, though, is they want to find low propensity people who are Trump supporters.
Right.
Which may work great. The problem is it hasn't been tested in Wisconsin before. I don't know how that fits in with the state GOP saying, we want you, the casual Republican or hardcore Republican, vote early. Mm-hmm. Then we'll chase that low propensity swing voter we can get. Like, are they going to work together, or are they going to have an...
No, we haven't been able to see it. I mean, we have no evidence of how this is going to work.
Yeah.
Every election seems to be very different.
But always close. So we're chasing votes. We're also chasing money in politics these days. New finance, fundraising numbers out. Let's look at the Senate race first. So this is the raw numbers. Tammy Baldwin, $11 million raised. Yeah. This is basically July 25th, September 30th. Not a full quarter, but almost a full quarter. $11 million for her, $11.2 million by Eric Hovde. She spent $12.1 million. He spent $8.6 million. Mm-hmm. She's got $5.2 million. He's got $5.7 million. Okay. A couple notes about this, though. He kept it close because he gave himself $7 million.
Yeah.
Now he's up to $20 million invested in the race so far, which seemed like the...
That was kind of what he said he was going
to
do.
Yeah, like almost like the entry fee to get the Senate race as self-funder with $20 million. Interesting, he only raised $3 million from individuals.
Yeah.
It shows that he's just having a hard time with that pitch of, I'm a wealthy guy, I'm going to fund a lot of my campaign, but you should give me money, too.
Right.
So do you think what are you going to watch for in fundraising for you now in the election? Does it make a difference, the final push for money, you think?
You know, I think at the end of the day, the campaigns are probably going to match themselves, and we're going to just have to see what the national groups are doing, you know, the committees that come in and spend money. But, you know, I turn on the radio, I turn on the TV, it's every other ad is one or the two of them or one of the, campaign committees that are supporting them. I guess I don't know that it's going to make a whole lot of difference.
I think the budgets have been set, basically.
Right.
It's from the edge of this part.
Yeah.
Worth noting that Baldwin raised $9.4 million from individuals.
Yes.
Shows a contrast. Yes. And she's now raised $47.8 million for the cycle, which is a very
It's a lot of money. And you are right. I mean, Hovde has not brought in a whole lot. But also, it's tough. You are a wealthy guy. Yeah. How do you convince people to give you money?
So we'll get more on the race, Senate race a little bit later. But let's talk about the first and third CDs. So don't want to slight the other congressional races in Wisconsin, but these are the two most competitive ones. I'll look at the first. So Brian Stile got outraised by Peter Barca. Okay, nice, Peter.
Sure.
$910,000 or so to $849,000. Now, Stile spent more, $2.4 million to $1.5 million. still has a lot more in the bank at $3.2 million to $98,000.
Yeah.
So that's advantage to style for the final push.
Yeah.
In the third congressional district, we'll pull that one up here in a second, Derek Van Orden got outraised by Rebecca Cook. $2.6 million for her, $1.4 million for him.
Mm-hmm.
She spent more, $2.5 and $2.1. He's got more in the bank. Let's start with the first initially, talk about the dynamic.
Yeah.
Do you think this is a real quote-unquote race that is winnable for Peter Barca?
I think it's still a tough, I think it's an uphill battle for him still. Brian Steil, I don't think has done a lot to offend most people in the district. That being said, Peter Barca is a name in Wisconsin politics. He's been around for a while. Obviously, he served during Act 10 and got pretty well known throughout the state for that, serving Congress. But I still think that's an uphill battle for him.
For what it's worth,
what do you think?
the Congressional Leadership Fund put out a poll that had Steil up 10 points. Now, even Republicans talk like it's not a 10-point race. But the CLF's trying to send a message of, we don't have to worry about that one. That one's kind of like off the books.
Yeah.
So to me, the difference in the two is House Majority PAC has got $2 million reserved in the first congressional district for the last 2 weeks of the race.
Mm.
They haven't spent anything yet.
Yeah.
They've got $4 million reserved in the third, and they started spending it this past week. So that tells me that's where the national folks think is really in play.
Well, I think it is. And I think if you look at, you know, the last time that Van Orden ran, there was not a lot of national support for him for the Democratic candidate for PAF.
Yes.
And they looked at that and they saw the tight margin and they were like, oh, what if we had done more?
I had a few Democrats ask you that question in Wisconsin after that race.
Yeah. So I'm guessing that's, you know, kind of why we're seeing that focus now.
You know, looking at these two districts, like if you go back to 22, because, you know, there were new lines that were drawn by the governor within the parameters of the old Republican map, the Supreme Court blast. But anyway, the lines are different from 2020.
Yeah.
So looking at 22, you know, Evers won the third very narrowly, lost the first very, very narrowly, but Ron Johnson did better in the third than in the first. So either way, if you use the Ron Johnson numbers, because it's he won by 1 point versus the governor's three, the third's a little more Republican of a seat. The first has got more of that suburban Milwaukee kind
it
of
does,
thing.
You've
got a urban area, Racine and Kenosha. You got Janesville.
Absolutely.
But Steil is not really perceived as a kind of a mean guy.
Right.
He's a, I don't want to say generic Republican, but he's basically not a in-your-face Marjorie Taylor Greene type bombastic Republican, right?
Right, right. He's not offending anyone.
Yes, very good way to put it.
Yeah.
In the third, Trump should do fairly well. That's kind of like his territory. But I've talked to Republicans who say that Van Orden has not used his first term to be a Ron Kine or Steve Gunnarsson. Now, Steve Gunnarsson is ancient history to a lot of people around here, but Republican who had that seat, who was kind of middle of the road.
Yep.
Ron Kine was not a Madison Democrat, very much a pro-trade. And they found ways to get crossover votes that would insulate you against maybe a bad cycle. Van Orden has bought hard into the MAGA kind of like bombastic type thing.
Mm-hmm.
The run-ins with the Senate Pages, the whole thing at the National Convention where he claimed this anti-war activists had assaulted him when he basically, something happened in line.
Something happened.
But Cook, to her credit, she's raised good money.
She has.
She runs these ads about her waiting tables during the campaign. I've talked to everyone and say, look, every time she posts on social media this like waitress thing, she gets money. Like people are like, hey, this is a real person. Now, the new ads coming out in this race are trying to undercut that because she worked with Democratic Operative.
She was a consultant, right?
So she's raised money.
Yeah.
They want her. She's cooked up this image. I know.
Oh.
The puns.
Oh.
So she's cooked up this image as this kind of real person, but she's actually an operative who's raised money for extreme Democrats.
Sure.
All that stuff. Like, I just feel like...
Well, there's a new ad out right now where it's putting her and Mandela Barnes together, right?
Yes.
Yes. You wrote about that.
Yes. Interesting decision. Yeah. We could dive into a whole show about that one.
Yeah.
But I think the point is that, you know, Cook needs Harris to hold court. Not win the third, but at least get her close enough top the ticket to give her a shot to win that race. I think that would be huge for her there. So, now, got a note. Again, didn't want to cite the other congressional races.
Yeah.
8th Congressional District, Kristen Lierley, who's probably not going to win, but she raised $978,000 in this most recent reporting period, whereas Tony Weed, the Republican, got $514,000. Now, $145,000, that was his own money. So, you know, it takes it down a little bit.
Sure.
This, to me, is an interesting example of the power of somebody who was running on the abortion issue.
Yep.
Can tap into a national fundraising network that wants to give to people talking about the abortion issue.
Yep.
And is part of the Democrat whole idea that we can help bottom up. I've been around for a long time. Everything is driven top down in my career.
Yeah.
But the Democratic, 97 candidates in the assembly, mm-hmm. all 16 Senate seats,
yep.
all the congressional districts,
yep.
their theory is the more bodies you have, the more money you raise,
yep.
the more messengers you have,
yep.
the more you help Tammy Baldwin and now Kamala Harris.
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to work?
Well, I don't know if it's going to work, I think like the 8th is an interesting one because, I mean, that's where I grew up. So that, you know, that was John Gard, that was Steve Kagan, mm-hmm. Reid Ribble. I mean, traditionally a pretty moderate, I mean, Mike Gallagher, obviously, pretty moderate seat. So to have someone who's really running hard on the abortion issue and then to have someone who's really running hard on the Trump backing is, I think, a diversion from what that seat has been before. So I'm interested in that. You know, I don't know if the bottom-up approach works, but we haven't seen it before because we haven't had this many competitive seats this, you know, down the ballot before in, you know, more than a decade.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so we got to turn to the U.S. Senate race. We've got a debate tonight, the one and only of the race. Will this make or break either candidate tonight,
no.
Jesse?
No.
Oh, why not?
It's Friday night. Who's watching this? I mean, I'm watching the debate. I'll be there. You'll be watching it. No, I think it's good to have debates, and I think that, you know, I'm glad it's happening, and I wish there were more. But who's watching it other than people who probably already kind of have an idea of how they're going to vote?
If it matters, it'll be an ad by Monday morning. How's that?
There you go. That's
what I'm watching
there you
for.
Go.
If there's something actually happens that is like
if
a
there is news,
moment.
Then it will matter.
Okay. So we're turning to stock picks. So Rise, U.S. State Finances, I fully admit I'm a budget dork. So
yes,
every year we get around now a fiscal report the previous fiscal year. It looks at the final look at spending and revenues during that year. Bottom line is we have about $400 million more to play with in this biennium. So now the official report is $4.6 billion in the checking account, the general fund,
sure.
and the fiscal year. That's a bit misleading. Because they delayed a transfer to building projects for UW that they're going to do in the secular budget. So, okay, knock that off. We took spending expenses the second biennium. The bottom line is probably $3.5 billion for a surplus end of the two-year period versus $3.1 that Fiscal Bureau had projected back in January. So, okay.
Okay.
Good. Second thing is Department of Revenue.
Oh, you are a budget dork.
As I know. quarterly numbers came out. Through the first few months of this fiscal year, they're up. And now remember, in 23-24, we ran ahead of projections. So they're up even compared to running ahead of projections from before.
Sure.
Income taxes are up. Corporate taxes are up. Sales taxes are up. Excise is down a little bit. We're not drinking as much as we should be, apparently, in Wisconsin. And other taxes are off a little bit.
I think we could probably help
out. Okay. We'll try. But this all plays into the next budget. It's a foundation for it. What I'm watching now is November 20th.
Yep.
We get the Evers administration telling us how much we're going to take in through the end of 27,
yep.
how much agencies want, and then we get a budget starting in February, the fun time rule. So we're in good shape there. I want to talk to you more about the Senate race. So like we talked about the numbers, we saw a poll from NRSC this week, the National Public Electoral Committee, saying that Eric Hovde was up by a point.
Sure.
Margin of error means they're basically tied.
Yeah.
I always feel like the best polling is done by the campaigns and the groups.
Yeah.
The ones I trust the least are the ones done by the campaigns and the groups because they only give me what they want me to see.
Yep.
That said, it feels like every talk to you is like waiting what's going to break in the presidential race. Because tell me if I'm wrong, but I can't find anybody telling me that Eric Hovde can win if Harris wins Wisconsin. Everybody's saying he needs Trump. The presidential race, we're 2.5 weeks out. Is something going to move? I hear Republicans feel really good because of X.
Yeah.
The Democrats go, oh, but look at Harris's crowds in Eau Claire,
sure.
Green Bay, La Crosse. There's something good happening there. So what's going to happen? What's going to move this race, right? Like, that's what I'm dying to know.
Yeah.
Will something push this race one way or another in the last 2 weeks?
Well, I guess I always felt like when it was Biden running still, I always felt like if he was going to win Wisconsin, it would have been because of Baldwin. Mm-hmm. Now I feel like Harris and Baldwin are more on an even keel of like they're either going to help each other or hurt each other. I think it's true, though, that Hovde is not going to win unless Trump wins the state. What's going to break it? I have no idea.
Well, you know, looking at the ad spending, talking to Democrats, at least ones I've talked to, they always feel like this race is going to get tighter. Like, they didn't buy it. She's going to win by 7 points or 8 points.
Well, I mean, it's Wisconsin. Like, obviously she did before, but yeah.
But I think the polling getting so tight so early and the spending disparity.
Yeah.
So the Senate Leadership Fund came in, now up to almost $23 million in spending the last month and a half of the race. Looking at the last 3 weeks, there's like a $7 or $8 million at least disparity between what the Republicans are spending. You know, that's Hovde, all the groups combined, and what Baldwin is spending.
Sure.
So to me, the not panic at this point, but the concern among Democrats is, okay, we do get tight, but her option to win if Trump wins is to get like these Republican-leaning voters or like by having a positive image and having good ads and stuff.
But it's also, I mean, what's been successful for her before, right? Like the manufacturing issues, the Made in America, the you know, ships in Marinette, the ag issues. I mean, there is that. She does have that crossover appeal, certainly.
But we started seeing transgender stuff a couple weeks ago, and that seemed to tighten things.
That
and there's a worry
is an impact, for sure.
Is that moving people, and is that like making it harder for her to win those Trump-y voters? Yeah. Like they're not hardcore Trump necessarily,
right?
But maybe those swing Republican voters.
You hear an ad talking about that, and you're like,
Oh, new ad out today that brings back a image of Donald Trump in her ad. So, Baldwin's talked many times about how she convinced Donald Trump to sign this Made in America. Yeah. You know, initiative, and then got Biden put into law.
Yeah.
New ad out just this morning that I saw at Ad Impact has an image of Donald Trump in her ad. Not a mistake with what's going on to try and tie her to them and say, look, I've been working with it. So I'm just watching, again, debate tonight. Don't think it's going to swing things dramatically either direction.
No. Obviously, everyone should pay attention.
Yes. Do your civic duty.
Yeah.
But that presidential race, does it swing? Is Trump's momentum real? Like, is it? The lines have crossed, real clear politics. Like he's now like maybe up a tenth of a point. Is that going to continue? Or are we now going to be in a 50-50 trajectory where it's like 2004, less than, or 2000, less than 6,000 votes?
Yeah.
04, less than 12,000 votes? Or like, I mean,
that's where I think we're at. Like, I think it's that close.
And are we missing? Is something going to move people in the last 2 weeks? Like, things break late. Obama in 08 was not up by like a dozen points in Wisconsin.
No.
But things broke late.
Yeah.
That happens in politics. Yeah. The last Marquette poll in 2016 had Clinton at 46, Trump at 40 or 41.
Yeah.
And the Comey letter came out. Things broke late. So that, is there a moment like that breaks late? I don't know. Last but not least, falling, it'll be Oshkosh. It's been a rough year for the Oshkosh campus. So let's see. We have...
It's been more than a rough year. It's been a rough few years.
We've got an $18 million deficit.
Yeah.
We've got layoffs to address the deficit. We have declining enrollment. And now the chancellor is leaving after a decade. Now, that chancellor might be missed by some people. The faculty, I think, in the spring, 72% who voted cast a no-confidence vote.
Yep.
So rough run for you. But Oshkosh, hopefully they get back on their feet and better trajectory sometime soon. But underscores the challenge these campuses are facing, and they would like to get some of that surplus we're talking about and rising.
They would.
They would appreciate some of that money.
And it's tough, but like, I mean, those campuses are really vital to those communities. So, you know, hopefully they can figure it out.
Great. Well, that's Rewind for October 18th. I am J.R. Ross.
I'm Jesse Apoyan.
Thank you for watching. Have a great weekend.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.